Hartley.
Ready?
Okay, we'll call to order this executive session of the Jacksonville Ethics Commission. And Kirby Carla, would one of you like to present to us the complaint we have?
Sure. And you have the information where I outlined the situation that we received an anonymous complaint in the ethics office on July 19th. And it was on secondary employment. And someone said, you've got the complaint here, Ms. Miller. It was, we have no way of contacting this person, but they said that this person was employed by the city for 20 years and she also has a part-time job, Ross Dress for Less. But she should, that she violated disclosure of her secondary employment. So we took a look at it and we found out that she did file her secondary employment on March of this year. And we didn't really crack down on the secondary employment until April, May of this year, when the HR department really kind of came in and they made every single employee in the city sign that they were aware of the secondary employment policy. Because prior to that, it was, maybe you knew about it, maybe you didn't. New people coming in, like if you were hired within the last 5 years, you would have been told in our new employee orientation. But if she's been with the city for 20 years, she would not have had that training. So I don't know how many city employees randomly read the ethics code to figure out if they have to report anything, but I thought that a really good start date for certainly being punitive or fining people would be after everybody acknowledged in writing that they received the policy and they were aware of it. And she even had filed it or heard about it prior in March when, so she filed even before she had to acknowledge it. So did she work for Ross Dress for Less a year prior? Maybe. But I don't think it's worth the Ethics Commission's time to pull that string. That's my recommendation.
All right. Any questions? Comments?
Agreed.
You said the complaint was filed in July.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And when the complaint came in, she actually did have a secondary employment disclosure on file.
Right. The complaint indicates that it says her name is not on the secondary employment list. Do we know what the complainee is talking about? Did you say the list?
Yes, under Chapter 602, the section on secondary employment, let's say there's 1,000 city employees that have secondary employment, but only 50 of them are at the upper levels of being appointed employees. And the law says that, our secondary employment law says that if you're one of those 50 employees who are appointed and you've got secondary employment, it gets posted on the website.
Okay.
And so I guess he was looking for that website and didn't see her name on it, so assumed that she hadn't complied with it. And that's a good point, because when I saw that, I thought, okay, the list has to be posted on the internet. It has to be accurate. So I just have been receiving emails this afternoon from HR documenting, here are the people that are appointed, and here are the ones that have secondary employment, and here's where we put them on the web, and they're redoing that whole procedure to make sure that that's tight. But she, I don't believe, was in the appointed employee category, so she wouldn't have known. She wouldn't have been on the list anyhow. It's for the higher echelon of employees that get... there's a whole definition. So anyhow, you're right. That whole thing of who goes on the list and is HR keeping up that list needs to be checked, and I'm doing that this afternoon. I'll keep up.
Being on or off that list is not necessarily dispositive as mm-hmm. the person that's disclosed secondary.
No. Because let's say there's 1,000 that, like, I'd say quite a few city employees have, and the police department, I mean, they all have secondary employment.
Is it true?
I know. And so if we, like every time at Christmas, when everybody gets jobs, extra jobs at Christmas with post office, and if we tried to put all that up on the internet and keep it, it would be crazy to do that. And so we just said, well, why don't we just do the appointed people, the people at the top, because that's really important on whether they have any kind of conflicts or secondary employment, without trying to track
But Carla, didn't they change who was appointed probably during the Peyton administration? They changed that whole appointed. Mm-hmm. So really you have some middle people that are became appointed because they didn't want them in civil service anymore.
Right.
So, cause
right. And it went from about maybe 50 when we first wrote the ethics code to a few hundred.
Right.
I know.
Real quick. So
it's a bigger group now.
She probably was not in it and then later on became part of it.
Yeah, perhaps. But that whole thing on who gets on the list and where the list is and linking it is like an administrative detail that Kirby and I are going to continue to monitor, and we can report to you in an open meeting. That's not really confidential as to her situation, but we can report in an open meeting at the next one exactly how we tightened up on that list and how it's going, because it needed tightening up.
And perhaps the way that that's disclosed on the website as to who's included or not included or what level, maybe that could be a little bit more helpful for a leader. It's also possible a leader just didn't even need it. But if you just look at that as part of the evaluation, is this confusing? Is there a way to tighten up that language? That might be helpful as a disclosure.
That's good. We'll do that. And we'll report in an open meeting as to what we did next month.
I've got a question, Carla. So just in general, let's say we dispose of a complaint without taking action. Does the target of the complaint, what kind of information do they get about the complaint?
We don't have that in our internal operating procedures. Like if you dismiss, see, ordinarily, if this had come in on a sworn complaint, we have 5 days to give a copy to the person who was complained against. This came in as an anonymous one. It's not even a complaint yet. It's nothing yet until you guys decide whether you want to self-initiate the complaint. So it's sort of in this twilight zone. So if we dispose of it, dismiss it, saying it's not worth self-initiating on the complaint and imposing penalties, if we dismiss it, then it becomes a public record. And then I would probably, send it to Lisa, the person who's complaining, and say, this came, the Ethics Commission did not pursue it. You know, she should know, it's a public mm-hmm. record.
Okay. Yeah, that brings up a good point. I know the IG's office did quite a bit of disclosing allegations just as part of the normal process. And we obviously need to stick to the law, but it would be helpful not to give a forum to those who want to lob inappropriate accusations, is all I would say.
Yeah, exactly right. So I wouldn't take this particular thing and say, guess what, there was a complaint against Lisa Ransom, and you know that she had secondary employment, she might have violated the ethics code, but we're dismissing it, and then circulate it to the entire city. That would not be good. You don't want to make that, you don't want to get out that kind of public record when
it's really just part of us going through the procedure to figure out, does this require action or does it not? But there's not anything to call attention to highlight, because anybody can accuse anybody of anything. And so just thinking about that, not in this specific case, because I don't think there's any real issue here, but with what happened with the IG's office, not sending an email to everybody is step one, but perhaps there are other appropriate ways to not provide inappropriate spotlight on accusations that may or may not be true, that we can't determine. I'm not saying we need to handle that now, I'm just throwing that out there as an idea in the future, that we need to think about the negative aspects of disclosing something that we can't validate to be true or not.
And I think we should discuss that in an open meeting, and
that's a good point.
You know, that's something maybe
you're
a hotline right. Subcommittee can think with a little bit.
You're absolutely right.
But it's a good idea.
I have a question, Ms. Dan. I know you said that the upper level employees are the ones who are required to, yeah. So, like, in an instance like this, do you think that this process would be more transparent, maybe if it were like an online process, like if it were electronic, meaning that to your point about this list that, you know, only is relative if you are like in a certain bracket, I guess. But if it were an online process where anyone who had secondary employment had to go online and it all happened electronically or digitally, then the information will automatically post. And so maybe, you know, everything that they input is not public record, but once they complete that process, if they were engaged in secondary employment, then at least their name would appear on a list that is all-encompassing of anyone who does it.
Okay, and let me just say that we can't discuss broad policy issues. We're only exempt for discussing this particular case.
Okay.
But that's a good point, and maybe we bring that up on the agenda, and one of the subcommittees takes that up, but we can't discuss it at this point.
Okay.
So if anyone's got kind of factual questions, you can certainly ask those. Anything of that nature before we vote on this?
So this just not go far enough to even determine whether or not there actually was a violation? Because once you looked, you saw, hey, before the complaint, they filed this, it's there. So you didn't even investigate whether or not it was timely or anything because it showed compliance prior to the complaint. Is that what we're looking at?
Yeah. And maybe she worked for Ross last year too, but I think we'd have a hard time like pulling the string on proving that was an intentional violation of the ethics code. I just don't think we'd be able to do it. And so if we're going to have a start date, the start date would be April or May of this year when everyone signed that declaration. We didn't kind of like drill down on those facts.
Because she was in compliance prior to
complaint. Mm-hmm.
You need to look at what I handed you.
Ah, yes. The ethics code requires that the commission issue a report on why they dismissed a complaint, although this isn't a complaint yet. So it's sort of in a, like I said, this Twilight Zone thing of we're not dismissing a complaint really because it's not a complaint. It's an anonymous piece of paper that came to us that you're here to decide whether or not you want to self-initiate a complaint against this person. And you don't, like you either want to self-initiate a complaint and then we'll deal with it then, or you don't want to self-initiate a complaint. If you don't want to self-initiate a complaint, I don't think the rules say that you have to list a reason, but you could list a reason, like the reason could be something along the lines of the policy was fully implemented in May of this year. She disclosed prior to that time. We don't want to pursue it, period. Could be good enough.
I think
good enough.
Yeah, fair. Good enough.
Kirby and I can write something like reflecting that reason if that's the wishes of the group.
Mm-hmm. I think that's important for the person who filed the complaint to be able to see that and understand.
And the reason it's not an official complaint is because it's not signed, and that's what's required to be an official complaint. Otherwise, we consider it as part of self-initiation if needed. Got it.
Someone's got to sign that paper and come forward and initiate the complaint, and if it's not the complaint, then it's got to be the commission. So you could, if it were different, if it were a different scenario, you could self-initiate a complaint. So, I mean, we can take a look at that in an open session and kind of think through, you know, some of the issues that have been brought up here, because now we have an example and we can use that to kind of see if we're thinking through the best way on all these things.
Yeah, we've only had this authority, 2 years?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is that to be signed or signed and sworn to?
Both. Yeah,
has to be sworn.
Yes.
We notarize essentially.
Yes.
You can't slip a paper under our door and have that be an official ethics complaint. You know, you can't. And that's what.
Well, you said it was signed. You said if it was signed, it would have been an official complaint. I just wanted to make sure that it had to be sworn to. You said too.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I just wanted to point out to on the Rule 8 that you can make a determination that the complaint is legally insufficient. And so that's what it sounds like to me that Carla, that's what her recommendation would be, is that it's just insufficient.
Well, it's not legally insufficient.
Yeah, I don't think we have to judge the merits of dismissing it. We're choosing whether we want to initiate or not. If we want to get to the merits of it and dismiss it, we can, but we have to initiate that first. So it's kind of like a court granting cert, and then we can decide what we want to do with the case.
So this person, if they, let's say they're circling back, the alarmist complaining, circles back and is checking on whether or not anything was done about this and sees that, you know, the complaint was not initiated by the commission. We're saying they could then still then file a formal complaint. Sworn to, sign, and then back in our last, they would have to come make sure they were complaining.
Yep. Right, or choose to dismiss it for, you know, for the same reasons.
Or whatever reason.
Right. And so this is good. You can see, like, it's really hard to read the rules and be able to extrapolate from that how all cases should be handled. But now that you've seen one, mm-hmm. we can be in an open meeting and we can kind of like track through it and see if we've covered all these bases and if there's a better way to do it. There might mm-hmm. be. So that'd be a good topic to put on our next agenda for October.
You can work on it on a plane back and forth.
Yeah, that's right. I can. I've got 15 hours.
Is this top of your list?
A motion, I guess, at this point. Okay. I would move based on the lack of it being a signed complaint and also the apparent substantial compliance that's on the face of the documents that we have before us that we not initiate a complaint.
Second.
Okay, any further discussion on that motion? Okay, all those in favor, aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those against? Okay, great.
Thank you. We'll write this up for everybody, and we will contact the person and tell them what happened. And we'll bring it up in our next meeting as an agenda item that we can kind of track mm-hmm. through some of the good ideas that we've had.
Great. Thank you, Carl. Thanks, Carl.
Mr.
Okay, then we'll adjourn the closed session.